In her novel, Mrs. Stevens Hears the Mermaids Singing, Mae Sarton observes, "Love opens the door into everything as far as I can see, including and perhaps most of all, the door into one's own secret and often terrible and frightening real self." If we have been through very much of life at all, we each know what she's talking about. We know that secret and often terrible and frightening real self of which she speaks. I certainly know that I know it. I know the parts of me that I work the hardest to keep in check, to keep under cover. I recognize the cruel thought that can leap to my mind, the selfish urge to get what I want. I have felt suspicion and mistrust and fear well up in me. These are all aspects of my secret and often terrible and frightening real self. But if it is love that opens the doors into everything, might we welcome its presence into the dark corners of our personalities too? All my life, my Grandpa Lyman had a terrible, terrible temper, though it hardly ever showed because he had learned to control its destructive outbursts. Especially when he was a little boy, my Grandpa Lyman would fly into fits of rage. He would scream and cry and throw things. He would threaten to hurt others and himself, sometimes over the smallest of matters. He was a tempest of a little boy. His mother and father, my great-grandparents, knew they had to help their son manage his emotions better. So they patiently and lovingly began helping him train himself to control his temper. The whole family was on board with this practice. It didn't always work, but as he got older, my grandfather was able to become the kind, generous, loving man that I knew. But his terrible, terrible temper never, ever left him. His whole life, my grandfather lived with that secret and often terrible and frightening real self inside him. As a boy, I remember watching him closely when something upset him. It was as if time slowed down a little bit. I could see his mind working to control the fury that was building up inside him. I remember him sometimes needing to walk away a bit and clench his fists and mutter something under his breath. I remember him excusing himself from a meal or from a conversation to cool down a bit, in his own words. So developed were his skills at managing his temper. None of us ever feared him or outbursts. He was not violent with anyone. He did not swear or yell, but he never, ever rid himself of this temper. It was inside him his whole life on a daily basis. As he died of Parkinson's disease in his 80s, my grandfather's temper emerged again, and finally this time got the upper hand of him. As his mind lost more and more control on his emotions, the temper came out, making him do and say things that he would have hated. His family knew that it was the disease talking, and we loved him through it to the end. To love is to accept the whole person. Love cares about the beautiful, professional, competent aspects of ourselves, and it cares about the rude, mean, frightened, and selfish parts too. That is why it is so powerful. I think that is why our universalist ancestors were so confident in their assertion that God is love and love is God. More than anything else in the human world, love has the power to disarm, to heal, to re-engage, and to rejoice. Love sees us as we are, just as we are. It loves us in all of our faults and for all of our shortcomings. As Paul of Tarsus so powerfully says in his letter to the congregation at Corinth, Greece, love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. He says, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. These ancient, ancient words that say, love never ends. What would it be like if we could live this love, starting with ourselves? How might it change us? How might it change this church? As many of you know, the standing committee here at First Parish in Concord is engaging the congregation in a year for reflection and visioning. In this, my fifth year of ministry among you, the standing committee has heard you through listening sessions and an online survey. I will join them in more listening at next week's retreat. And what we are hearing is fascinating. Without revealing too much too soon, and I won't, don't worry, I can tell you that your leaders here at First Parish are hearing that it is an amazing congregation with talented and committed members. Your leaders are also hearing that there are still too many hurdles to people feeling included and valued as members of our congregation. We are doing wonderful things together, and our congregation has a mean shadow side that hurts and excludes people. In our desire to look perfect, we avoid addressing past hurts and destructive behavior. We let hurt feelings grow and fester. But listen again to May Sarton. She says, love opens the doors into everything, as far as I can see, including and perhaps most of all the door into one's own secret and often terrible and frightening real self. The theme for this year's annual pledge campaign is By Design. It's give love and the people will find a way. It is a message of hope. Is it a promise for the future? Give love and the people will find a way. And it is the May Sarton kind of love we're talking about here, not something ushy-gushy, something real. Give love urges us to find within ourselves not only the money First Parish needs, but also the desire to see it become a more whole, integrated, and loving community. Just as my grandfather's terrible temper never left him his whole life, you and I are not required to rid ourselves of one aspect or another. We are whole human beings just as we are. What we are required to do is to recognize our whole selves and to strive together to create a more loving community. We have made incredible strides in this work in the past few years, and I am excited to continue our progress in the coming years ahead. Give love, and the people will find a way. When you make your pledge to First Parish in Concord this morning, you say to this community, I believe in you. I want you to continue growing in love. When I make my pledge to First Parish in Concord this morning, I say, I trust that we are going someplace good together. I trust that a way will open for us. Now, it is my practice to give 5% of my gross income to my church. It's been that way all of my life, even when I was a teenager. This means that this year I will be giving $7,250 to First Parish in Concord for the coming year. And I'm proud to be able to do this. And this amount is $250 more than I gave last year. And if you think that my giving is high, maybe too high, so high that you could never get there yourself, remember, it's just 5%. If you are giving 5% of your gross income, no matter how large or how small that income is, you are just as generous as the minister. Way to go. Likewise, if everyone here this morning followed my lead and raised their pledge by $250 or more, it would make a big difference in the budget. But what matters more than the number that you will soon write on a pledge card is how that number makes you feel. Because it is substantial, my pledge makes me feel much more a part of First Parish in Concord than it would if it were smaller. I know my pledge goes to make the world a better place, so I want it to be as high as I can reasonably afford. This is your moment to decide what First Parish in Concord means to you. This is your moment to decide how much you will give back to it in the coming year. Look around you. There are pledge cards and envelopes and pens at the end of each pew. And if for any reason we run out in any given pew, just raise your hand and we'll get you another one. Our children are going to rejoin us and sing a song that they've been practicing. Then each of us is invited to bring our pledge card forward and to put it in the basket. We have plenty of time for this important ritual. There is no hurry. So think of a dollar amount that would make a difference in the life of this congregation. Give as much as your income will allow, even if it's 5%. Make a promise to your church that makes you feel good. Write that generous number down on your pledge card and hold onto it and get ready to bring it in, to bring it down to the front after the children sing. So be it. Amen.